argument is Barrett versus Barnard. Ms. Duncan? Or Mr. Duncan, sorry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. Given the need for brevity during oral arguments and the desire to avoid regurgitating my brief in any substance, I am going to argue primarily two of my many points raised in my brief. First issue is the functional capacity questionnaire or evaluation that was performed in this particular case. There is no definitive ruling in the Seventh Circuit as to whether a functional capacity evaluation is a recognized medical source under the federal regulation. An additional issue is whether the applicant or the administrative law judge failed to address medical conditions of Barrett and whether he failed to apply properly the Social Security rules with regard to obesity. Briefly, at the time of the hearing, Ms. Barrett was 38 years old, was 5'1", weighed 313 pounds. She had a high school education. At that hearing, the administrative law judge asked a hypothetical question of the vocational expert, asking him to assume her ability to do light work, defined by the Dictionary of Occupational Titles and Social Security Regulations as being 20 pounds of lifting occasionally, 10 pounds lifting frequently, standing for 2 hours out of an 8-hour day, sitting for 6 hours out of an 8-hour day, then deviating from the normal light duty. He also indicated a need to alternate her position between standing and sitting, and also to have fine sound discriminations, but that the individual could understand normal conversation. Based upon that issue, or on that hypothetical, the vocational expert opined that she could perform other work in the national economy under step 5 of the sequential process. However, the medical records show that there was treatment for carpal tunnel noted. As outlined in the brief, she had several instances of medical records of involving carpal tunnel, bilateral numbness in her hands, physical therapy, medication prescribed by Dr. Hooper. She also suffered from osteoarthritis in both knees and was treated for that, including noted difficulties with that. The claimant had a functional capacity evaluation prepared at Sacred Heart St. Mary's Hospital. That evaluation was requested both by her doctor and by her attorney. The result of that report said that she could not return to full-time work or even part-time work. She may be able to tolerate very limited tasks, which involve sitting primarily. When asked to evaluate that functional capacity, the vocational expert, pursuant to a hypothetical question, the vocational expert indicated that such an individual could not perform work within the national economy, and a finding of disability would therefore have been merited. The most fundamental issue that I wish the Seventh Circuit to address is making a finding that a functional capacity could be and should be an acceptable medical source. 404.1527 2 of the regulations note that medical opinions are statements from physicians or psychiatrists or other acceptable medical sources that reflect judgments about the nature and severity of your impairment. I can only represent to the court, being a practitioner in the administrative sphere as well as before this court and other and federal district courts handling Social Security matters, that I represent between 2 and 250 applicants each year. And in those, at least one-fourth, if not one-third, have functional capacity evaluations. Those individuals have them ordered by doctors. If they're lucky, the doctors review those evaluations and then just sign them and adopt their findings. Seldom, if ever, do doctors alter or change the findings. From a purely economical point of view, both for the system as well as for the claimant, adopting this procedure would be appropriate. I've indicated that other jurisdictions or other circuits have found certain medical procedures and practitioners as being appropriate other medical sources.
How do the circuits line up on this, Mr. Duncan? Have any of the circuits accepted your argument?
None of them, as far as I can tell, Your Honor, have looked at it at all. I think in part it's because the functional capacities, as I indicated, are many times just adopted by the doctor.
And the functional capacity what kind of qualifications does the individual have who does this?
Usually a functional capacity evaluation is performed by an individual who is either a licensed physical therapist or a licensed occupational therapist. Many times a doctor is involved. Marshfield Clinic in Wisconsin, who does a large volume of those for my clients, actually has both a physician and a psychologist to oversee.
I don't want to eat any more of your time than
no
I have
problem.
To. Let me ask just one follow-up question. How would this, if we were to adopt your position, how would this play out for your client in this case?
What it would alleviate is the need when an individual such as my client is of short economic resources to go to doctors. What it would allow me to do is to arrange to have a functional capacity evaluation done for them.
This evaluation in this case, where does it get you?
In this particular case, it is my opinion that the administrative law judge did not accurately look at that examination and follow it. He does make reference to it, but he did not evaluate it.
You're not answering Judge Ripple's question. What difference would the evaluation make for your client?
In this particular circumstance, the vocational expert said that if that particular functional capacity evaluation done for Ms. Barrett were adopted as the finding of the administrative law judge, she would be disabled under Step 5. Because no person with those qualifications that are contained in that FBE would be able to perform work in substantial numbers in the national economy.
I know that no court has adopted this test that you urge us to adopt, but has it been urged on other courts and rejected?
I found nothing. The cases I cited, Your Honor, are cases that do adopt things like nurse practitioners and other things. I know chiropractors have been looked at and have been rejected in most circuits. But nobody has looked at an FCE because primarily it's always done at the bequest of a doctor. But as a practitioner, it would make life easier for those in the trenches to adopt this ruling within this circuit. And then very briefly, the rulings, both 02P, which 002T, which was in effect at the time of this hearing, and then the subsequent Social Security ruling 02-1P were not examined by the administrative law judge. This is a situation many times where the commissioner is given the duty and the obligation to create and to interpret the rules, and they do that by adopting regulations. It's then the requirement of the courts to make sure that the administrative law judge follows the commissioner's own regulations and rulings on this issue. There's nothing within the body of the administrative law judge's decision which indicates that he did an application of that ruling. I know that the defendant or the commissioner has argued that he did it and has done it and has laid out ground rules and things, but I believe it's mostly post hoc rationalizations by the commissioner filling in where the administrative law judge failed. I'll reserve my remaining
time.
Okay,
thank you, Mr. Duncan. Ms. Zeman?
May it please the Court, Sarah Zeman for the Commissioner of Social Security. Your Honor, this case involves a young woman who applied for disability insurance benefits and SSI, but who beyond obesity and a hearing impairment did not have a lot of significant medical problems that affected her ability to work.
Did the administrative law judge look at the totality of her problems?
He did, Your Honor, he did.
Where's that? I didn't see that.
In Andrew's decision, he indicates that he considered more than just her obesity and her hearing impairment in formulating her RFC. He primarily relied on the opinions of two state agency physicians to determine that Ms. Barrett could perform light work. However, he acknowledged that Ms. Barrett had knee arthritis, and this was evidence that was...
The vocational expert said that there are 5,000 factory jobs in Wisconsin that she could perform. Did he give some examples of those jobs?
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're asking. More details about the factory jobs?
Yeah.
No, he did not.
He just said 5,000 factory jobs?
Factory laborer type jobs, yes.
Well, I don't see that. How could she do a factory job with her assortment of ailments?
Well, because she was given, as I was saying, the ALJ acknowledged that she had knee arthritis, and he limited her to the ability to sit and stand as necessary. So that would be a factory job where she could sit and stand to perform the work as she needed to. And as
what kind of factory jobs are those?
I can't speculate about that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. And so as I was saying, the state agency physicians didn't include a limitation to sit and stand. And then the knee impairment evidence was post-dated these physicians' review, and it shows that the ALJ was considering Ms. Barrett's impairments in combination with her obesity. He acknowledged that her obesity exaggerated her knee arthritis, and then he included a markedly stronger limitation in her RFC to reflect that. Now, Ms. Barrett argues that the functional capacity evaluation should be accepted as a recognized medical source. And this is not an issue of first impression in this court. The regulations clearly specify how to handle such evidence as a therapist report, and it specifies that the agency may consider evidence from therapists. And in fact, this court has considered this in Lauer v. Apfel. It acknowledged that reports from therapists are helpful when determining this, but that indeed it remains with the ALJ to consider these reports in the context of the record as a whole. Now, Ms. Barrett argues that this should be considered, but in fact, as this court pointed out, if this were considered, the effect that this would have on Ms. Barrett is that the ALJ would weigh it in the context of the record, which he did here.
And I don't understand you. Well, did you say he should consider it, or he doesn't have to consider it? What are you saying?
I'm saying that he should consider it, of course, as part of the record evidence. And he did consider it in this case, and he explained...
Did he? Where did he do that?
In his decision, especially pages 13 through 15. Especially on page 13, he cites it... this is transcript pages. Page 2 and 4 of the ALJ's decision.
Well, pages 2 and 4, did you say?
Right, but it's transcript pages 13 and 15.
Well, that's just... I'm looking at the... copy in the appellant's brief, which is numbered 1 through 5 or whatever.
Okay, you want the page site in the plaintiff's brief? Right, it's then pages, at the bottom of page 2 of the appendix, the ALJ discusses the functional capacity evaluation. Now, what the ALJ points out is that he found this opinion not to be entitled to weight because
of... Where did he say that?
If you turn to page 4 of the appendix, the ALJ said, in conclusion, given that the only significant medical...
Where are you?
I'm sorry, the first paragraph, the last sentence.
Doesn't say conclusion.
I added that. The ALJ says, given that the only significantly medically documented...
Where is this?
I'm sorry?
Where are you reading?
I'm reading from page 4 of the appendix in plaintiff's brief.
Where on page 4?
At the top paragraph, the last sentence.
Uh-huh, okay.
Given that the only medically documented impairments are her hearing problem and obesity, this report is not convincing.
Well, I don't understand that. You say there's... He said there's some, on page 2, there's some evidence of degenerative arthritis of the knees.
Right, and he also was pointing out that the claimant alleged during the functional capacity...
Why isn't that significant?
I'm sorry?
Why isn't degenerative arthritis of the knee significant for a factory worker?
Well, actually, that is, and ALJ acknowledged that in his decision, that she had degenerative arthritis.
Well, I don't understand that, because in the sentence you just read, he said, given that the only significant medically documented impairments are her hearing problem and obesity. Now you're saying, in addition, he thought her degenerative arthritis was also medically significant.
Yes, but that was one impairment that he was referring to. He was pointing out that many of the other allegations...
Well, you've lost me, because you seem to think this given sentence was significant.
Yes, I do.
It names two significant impairments, hearing and obesity. Now, what's the significance of the arthritis?
The significance of the knee arthritis is that it was accommodated in the ALJ's RFC decision.
What do you mean it was accommodated in there? What are you talking about?
Well, it's the only significant evidence in the record medically that explains why the ALJ went further than the state agency physicians in making a limitation to a sit-stand option for Ms. Barrett. Now, the rest of that sentence is referring back to these other impairments, which are these other conditions which Ms. Barrett alleged during the functional capacity evaluation that the ALJ found were not supported by any impairments of record. And that's why the ALJ did not give weight to this report. And the cases that Ms. Barrett...
She has arthritis, and she has a hearing problem, and she has obesity. Now, what about her hands?
The ALJ found that this was not requiring any further limitations to her RFC. The only evidence in the record regarding her hand complaints arose around late 1999 when she was working at the Mink Ranch.
No, all he says is the undersigned cannot find that this carpal tunnel business rises to the level of a severe impairment.
But he also
denied that she has. He didn't deny that she has this numbness and so on. Did he?
I'm sorry. Did the ALJ deny that she had numbness?
Yes.
Let me check. I don't think he denied that she had numbness. He acknowledged that she complained of numbness and arm pain. And he referred to the record when he said that she didn't go through any EMG testing to establish that she actually had carpal tunnel syndrome. And her physician didn't diagnose this. He just referred her to some therapy for about a month, which she went through, and after which, at the end of which, she showed improvement. Contrary to Ms. Barrett's allegation that the therapy ended without resolution, she actually did show improvement. And again, the state agency physicians were able to review this evidence as it was in the record during the review, and they did not find that any limitations were justified by these complaints. Going back to the functional capacity evaluation, the cases that Ms. Barrett cites, she cites some cases from the Ninth Circuit and Fourth Circuit and a district court in North Carolina, but these cases all also acknowledge, similar to Lauer in this court, that...
Now, does her deafness impose any limitations on the work she can do?
Yes, one of the state agency physicians noted that she had a hearing impairment and had some limitation, and the ALJ imposed a limitation of... being able to wear her hearing aids, of course. And some limitation in phone sound discrimination.
What does that mean?
Well, I think she had some mispronounced the word, and I think the ALJ wanted to recognize that she may not.
What does that mean? So there are some factory jobs where you need this hearing and somewhere you don't?
I think I would be speculating, but I would say that there are some factory jobs... May I finish? Some factory jobs where you don't need fine sound discrimination in order to do that.
Well, that implies there is some where you do need it.
Yes.
Is that what the vocational expert, when he selected this figure of 5,000, these are 5,000 factory jobs that don't require finds sound discrimination?
Correct. Yes.
And there are others that do, did he say?
He didn't say. I don't think that was asked.
Was he told about her hearing problem?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Damon.
Thank you.
Duncan, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Thank you. Your Honor pointed to one specific point that's important. 021P and the predecessor, 003P, the two rulings specifically state that the commissioner, when there's a finding of obesity, is to consider all the impairments, that if they're medically determinable, not that they're severe impairments, but medically determinable impairments, and to consider them. Counsel makes the argument that the arthritis was considered by the administrative law judge. Looking through the decision, there's nothing that says that he considered the arthritis. She is assuming that because he altered the finding of the state agency to include these allegations about a sit-stand option, that arthritis comes into play. We can't assume that. It could have been because he considered arthritis. It could have been because he considered her obesity. It could have been because he considered some other condition, such as her back. It could have been for any other reason. We do not know. And accordingly, the decision just
was not holding. Was the vocational expert told about her arthritis?
He was, in the hypothetical question that was presented, he was not given restrictions based on arthritis under the first hypothetical. Under the second hypothetical, assuming that her arthritis was measured by the functional, he would have been advised accordingly, because in the FCE it specifically notes difficulty because of arthritic pain in her knees. And in the second hypothetical, she was found disabled by the vocational expert saying she could not perform any work in the national economy.
I see, but the figures about the 25,000 jobs and so on, that's based on the first hypothetical question?
Yes.
Not the second.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Seaman. Next case for argument is